Welcome back to Buzzardry. It is April 1st, right before 5:30 p.m. Central Time, April Fool's Day. I'm Patrick McGee. I'm here with Jacob Fitzgerald and Jonathan Brent. How are you guys doing?
Good. Nice long weekend. Pretty good baseball.
Yep, doing pretty well. Didn't have a long weekend, but...
Sorry, Fitz. Hope your Friday was okay.
It was fantastic. Thank you.
Yeah, so... Golden Eagles go 3-1 on the weekend, beating Tulane on Tuesday and then taking 2 out of 3 against Troy. And pretty good weekend. I mean, you win easily on Thursday, and then you kind of – or you lose there on Friday, kind of falling apart late on the mound and on the and defensively. But then you come back and rebound with a solid win on Saturday. But I guess what was y'all's main thoughts coming out of the week as a whole? It was a nice bounce-back weekend, I think you could say.
Yeah, we needed that Sunday win, so I'm kind of bad. That would have been a true, what's it called, sliding doors moment, at least for me mentally. That Friday game was nuts and did a little too many things to give up that victory, but we did enough right to win it and salvage it too. So that coming back up in the end of that Friday, that Saturday, goodness, Easter's got me thrown off. That third win of the series really changed my mood for the week.
Yeah, just looking at the numbers offensively, I know that's been the story of the season, and huge bounce back week offensively. I mean, the least amount of hits you've got is that Saturday game three that you win, and that's 7 hits, so 14 against Tulane. 20 in that run rule game and 10 in the loss. Hard to be upset about, the state of the offense over the last week.
Yeah, man, I think you look at that game against Troy, and I think you've seen like in kind of earlier in the season, especially or that Thursday game against Troy. And, you know, we kind of talked about maybe Luke Lyon would do the Martin Hankins kind of revenge game type deal. Baseball version of that. And, you know, obviously that really didn't happen. I mean, you score 14 runs, 20 hits. And, you've kind of seen in previous games kind of earlier in the year where, you know, you got a lot of free bases and that kind of was how you scored your offense. But, I mean, in that game against – the first game against Troy, I mean, you had, I think, 1 hit by pitch and no walks. So you really earned it. You really – and then, you know, you hit no home runs in the game, but you had doubles and then, you know, you're able to go the opposite way a bunch in that game. But, I mean, you kind of look at the numbers right now. I mean, we kind of talked about guys like Wilkes and Monastir. We're going to have to pick it up. And both of those guys had big weeks to where they're now over both 850 both over 800 in OPS in league play now with Monastir at 823, Wilkes at 867. And then, you know, I think the continued emergence of Dalton McIntyre. I mean, he had 5 hits. On Thursday, I was looking earlier today. He's 14 of 30 and runners in scoring position situations. So he's been incredibly big in those moments. Really good bat to ball skills. But yeah, man, I thought it was a good week for the offense overall. I mean, I thought it was a good matchup with Troy just because Troy didn't have any left-handers in the rotation. But I thought it was a solid bounce back for the offense. So any more thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think, like y'all said, the double-digit hits in 3 of the 4 games and the single-digit one was still a win. It was, a little more timely. I feel like we had a few more long balls this weekend. Well, I guess you didn't have any in a 20-run showing or the 20-hit showing, which is crazy on Thursday. But Peyto with 2, Monastir with 1, Gillespie, I believe, with 1. Maybe not too many, but it seems like every single home run came at a good time where you were up 2, made it 4, tied, made it 2-run lead, et cetera. Maybe where you lacked a little pitching this week, you picked it, the offense picked it up, which is good, complimentary baseball that you hope to see throughout this stretch of the back half of the year.
Yeah, so we kind of talk about depth there in the infield with, Broadus toward the end of the lineup, and he went 3-for-9, drew some walks. You got a little bit of production there from the catcher position. You know, Stockman came in. I remember as a pinch hitter in that Friday game, got a clutch kind of bloop single to keep the rally going. But yeah, I mean, I thought it was overall a good bounce back weekend for the offense with, you know, Wilkes, Pato, and Pato, I think has really turned a corner overall this year, 985 OPS. And we kind of talked about him before the year as being one of those game records with Wilkes, and Wilkes has his OPS up to 867. But
if you look at the conference only stats, really with anybody over like 20 at bats, Davis Gillespie's leading OPS with a 964.
Yeah, so your starting pitching was, you know, pretty solid, I think. I mean, none of your three guys went super deep, but they're all able to cover five-plus innings. I thought this was Armstead's probably best outing, going five and a third. Gave up two runs, both of those earned, but he struck out 10, really had a bunch of swing and miss going. But Oldham pitched well. I mean, you know, again, you know, just being kind of repetitive, but, I mean, all three, even though they weren't able to go super, you know, long, they weren't able to go seven or eight innings, able to have, you know, pretty quality outings. But I guess the concern is the bullpen, and, you know, you kind of ran into the question that, you know, is still trying to be answered by this team is, well, do you have a closer? And I think they're trying to kind of repurpose J.B. Middleton into a middle reliever. And, you know, you kind of go look at him or look at what he did on, you know, pitch well on Tuesday against Tulane, but then struggled on Saturday, wasn't able to record an out. And then you kind of went you went to Colby Allen there, trying to close the game out on Friday. He got hit pretty hard, although he wasn't helped by the defense. Maybe we can talk about that at some point, you know, with, you know, Gillespie not looking super comfortable at first base. And, you know, even though you did play well on Saturday, you know, Pato missing that ball that, you know, led to a couple runs there on Friday. But I guess that is the question, is who is going to emerge there in the back end of games? Is it Allen? Is it Sibley? Is it Middleton? Or English, you know, came in and closed the game out on Saturday after starting midweek on Tuesday. I mean, it could be a situation where you kind of ride the hot hand, but I think, you know, people think that, you know, Middleton probably has the best, you know, reliever profile just because, you know, has the most swing and miss stuff. But, you know, someone like an Allen, can he possibly get it going, even though he kind of has more middle or long relief profile? But I guess just thoughts on, you know, pitching and the bullpen particularly.
Yeah, I think going into the year, it was all kind of advertised to us that your back end three are Middleton, Cook, Payne, and Cook and Payne have been out of the picture for a few weeks. I believe Baker said one of these recent home games on the broadcast that Payne may be battling an injury. Don't know the extent or the nature of that, but I mean, Middleton probably, you'd say, hasn't thrown as well as you may have expected going into the year, and the other two have been non-factors. So when you lose whoever you think your last nine outs of every game are going to be going into the year, I feel like you're going to have these troubles. But I think we turned to Chandler Best this week a little more than we had in weeks past. And you, just by sheer numbers, I've mentioned it in the prior episodes, you need more bodies in that pen to be a little more reliable so you don't get hurt and run these guys down by the end of the year. And I thought Best was one pitch away from his best week since the LSU regional. And that was the first pitch fastball ambush. And Oz kind of said in his post game, like that matchup screen left on left, that guy had bad left-handed numbers and just ambushed the first pitch fastball. And that's baseball. But I thought that him and McCarty did a great job Tuesday of getting us out of the gate to give us a lead, four straight zeros. I thought that was one of the more complete games we played all year. But yeah, as far as bullpen depth, it's a similar kind of question. You're looking for more bodies. You're looking for more consistency from the bodies you have. And you hope your offense can give you bigger leads to give those guys, different guys, more opportunities and maybe less leverage to kind of find their groove.
Yeah, I think the key word in all that is consistency. I mean, you've seen a lot of good out of, you know, a variety of these players, but you got to Cross Sibley's got some pretty consistent performances, but for the most part, everybody's kind of up and down. Like, you know, I'd say over the week, Chandler Best was the most consistent with, you know, not considering that one pitch that you mentioned, but it's kind of tough to put your thumb on the pulse when, you know, you got a good outing from somebody on a Tuesday or a Thursday, whatever day your midweek is, and then they come in relief on Friday, Saturday and just stink. But I think if they find some consistency, we've got a lot of special guys in the bullpen, but consistency is going to be the key there.
Yeah, and it will be interesting to see if they can get Landon Payne back. I mean, you know, you could possibly look at, or, you know, his, you know, has a 15.75 ERA on the year, 3+ whip, but, you know, maybe you can say, well, if he's been hurt earlier in the year and he was 100%, you know, maybe he can come back and, you know, really give you something down the stretch. And I guess if you kind of look at last year, I mean, you had two guys that really weren't huge factors at this point. I mean, I guess Armstead had sort of emerged as like a semi-legit bullpen option at this time last year. But, you know, he wasn't, you know, your top bullpen arm or somebody you could, you know, trot out there and start like he did in the conference tournament. And then, you know, Justin Storm, you know, he was, you know, before the year, you know, really thought to be the closer. And they kind of tried to, you know, use him as that closer the first two thirds of the year. And, you know, he really didn't come on until that, you know, Coastal Carolina game. And then he became, you know, one of the more dominant closers in college baseball. So I think there's still time for somebody to come out of this bullpen and, you know, really kind of be that guy. Whether that's, you know, Middleton or, you know, maybe, you know, Allen or someone like that. Or, you know, maybe a Landon Payne like we talked about, the throw as well down the stretch when he comes back from injury. But, yeah, I think that is, you know, pretty important, as, you know, as you work into to league play, you know, talk about defining roles. And that's kind of what you use non-conference play for. And now you're, you know, or three weekends into conference play, you really want to be able to figure out those roles because you've got your weekend rotation pretty much figured out. I mean, after this last week, I think you would say definitely so, just because you got, you know, solid outings from all three your guys. Well, I mean, we'll see how that goes. Maybe there could be some change if, you know, someone like an Armistead has an outing where he struggles a couple weeks or a couple outings where he struggles a couple weeks in a row. But I think the bullpen is the big question, and just kind of continued. Or just some consistency from the offense. You know, we talked about in previous years, the offense hasn't necessarily been bad. I mean, you look at the numbers, the OPS numbers, the last couple of years have been, you know, above the Division I average, but, you know, it's been very streaky where you have weeks where, you know, you hit it really well, you know, like this last week, really. And then, you know, weeks like that, you know, the Georgia Southern week and or in the midweek against Ole Miss, where you really don't hit it well at all. So we'll see if you can get any kind of consistency out of the offense. And again, the bullpen, I think those are kind of the, I guess you would say, the two question marks or concerns. I mean, not, you know, not, you know, alarming concerns, but, you know, kind of small or, you know, small to medium sized question marks that, you know, you can get through league play with it. But, you know, when you get to postseason play, you know, assuming this team can get to a regional, those are the kind of things that can crop up.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that because I wanted to hammer home the point again that it seems like your weekend rotation is pretty solidified, and I want to give a special shout out to Armstead. That was probably the outing of his Southern's career, maybe second with one of those postseason outings last year. But going 5 1/3, 10 Ks, in a game where you needed a win desperately, that was big.
Yeah, so moving on to the midweek, so Southeastern Louisiana, first meeting it's in this year, and they are going to start. They're 18-10, 3-3. In the Southland, RPI is 136, Massey 125. And kind of an interesting year. They played, I guess the record is a little bit inflated. They played multiple non-division one games. They played a game against Alcorn, played a game against Mississippi Valley. But, you know, they beat EC. They went 2-1 at the LeClaire Classic at ECU. Beat ECU there, beat Cal State Fullerton, who isn't good. But, you know, it's kind of a name win. But they just lost their first a weekend series of the year, came close to beating LSU in a midweek. So, I mean, they're kind of your typical Southeastern, kind of middle of the pack, probably end up being a little, maybe upper middle of the pack in the Southland. But the guy they're going to start is a JUCO transfer from LSU, Eunice Aiden Vosburgh, 6'11 ERA, 158 whip. He's given up 23 hits in 17 2/3 innings, so he looks pretty hittable. 5 walks, 16 Ks. Opponents hitting 315 against him. So, I mean, it, you know, it looks like a pretty hittable pitcher, but I mean, offensively, solid offensively, 10-7 or 848 OPS as a team. A couple guys with OPS over 1,000, Shea Thomas, TJ Salvaggio. I guess something you kind of look at, this is a new coach there after Matt Reiser was, I guess, he was fired there and now he's in Memphis now. So they're not going to be as aggressive on the base pass. They hired the guy from Northwestern State. I think Bobby Barbier is the name. I mean, it's just, you know, you're kind of your typical Southland, midweek opponent, that, you know, you should win. But you know, in these midweek games, unless you're playing a SWAC opponent, they're pretty much all, you know, 60-40 or, you know, 60-40 or 40-60, you know, at worst, kind of in that, you know, in that range, depending on who you play. So I guess what's y'all's thoughts on them?
Yeah, you said it. Very, I guess, typical Southland team where they've got a few wins in their schedule that, I mean, they don't surprise you because it happens every year. But this year they've got a win at ECU. They were a couple outs from beating LSU, beat Fullerton, 2 out of 3 from UAB. So won some games they're supposed to, lost some games that probably not supposed to. But, yeah, you're going to have to show up just like any midweek and play your best baseball. Pretty comparable metrics to Tulane. RPI and Massey wise, and a little better hitting numbers than us, and very comparable pitching numbers against a probably worse schedule or clearly worse schedule than us so far. But yeah, if we're not ready to play, we can get punched in the mouth.
Yeah. Yeah, you said, I mean, I have a lot of respect for Southeastern, and I think they give us everything that we want when we play them. And if I remember correctly, is it from last year that they kind of owe us one, or is it we owe them one, or is that from the year before? I can't
remember.
Two years ago, yeah. So, you know, as a superstitious person myself, I would expect something like that to rear its ugly head before too late. So,
yeah,
I was curious. I made a comment after the Peyto trip, which obviously he's not trying to fall. Don't blame him for anything. But I wondered if that was enough of our payment for the baseball gods this year for the Marshall call and maybe even that Southeastern game too. But I'm not quite sure if it is. So you're right, Fitz. I'm glad you brought that up.
Okay, so moving on to South League Series. They're 16-12, 3-6 in the conference. So they just came off losing 2 out of 3 to ODU. Before that, they had kind of won a surprise series at Troy, 2 out of 3. But then a really bad weekend to open up the league year, getting swept at home by Georgia State. They're pretty decent in the non-league part of the schedule. They didn't play a super tough schedule, but, you know, they swept their opening tournament, which was North Alabama, Lamar, Southern Indiana. Took 2 out of 3 from Jacksonville State. Took 2 out of 3 from USC Wilmington. Then lost at Nebraska, 2 out of 3, which they had a lead there on that Sunday Arbor match. Ended up dropping that. Beat Mississippi State in a midweek in Biloxi. Lost a one-run game to Auburn in a midweek. That was 2 weeks ago. But I guess you look at the rotation that they're probably going to roll out there in some form or fashion. And I think the guy that the Friday guy that they've been rolling out there on every Friday is Carson Swilling. He's a transfer from Auburn. He's going to be kind of a low to maybe mid-90s type guy. 4.37 ERA, 1.43 WHIP, 19 walks, 41 Ks, and 35 innings. Going to throw a changeup. And then they have two Auburn transfers in the rotation. Cam Hill, who's a guy that primarily hit at Auburn last year. I don't know if he pitched at all, actually. So he's focusing on pitching exclusively this year for South. But he's a lefty, but he's, you know, got low 90s. But, you would think a low 90s lefty going to have big or decent strikeout numbers, but only 23 strikeouts and 34 innings, 13 walks, 5.56 ERA, 1.47 WHIP. And then their number three starter that they started against Old Dominion, Leif Moore, who's a South Mississippi guy, played junior college ball at Gulf Coast, 4.58 ERA, 1.47 WHIP, 9 walks, 18 Ks. And then you kind of look at the bullpen. Grant Wood has been their closer, but he struggled a little bit, 4.91 ERA, 2.27 WHIP, 10 walks, 18 Ks. Seth Carter's another guy to watch out for, big arm. He was a guy that was, you know, I think worked up to 97-98 in last year's game in Hattiesburg. He's a promotion springs, 5.27 ERA, 1.46 WHIP. And then offensively, I mean, you know, pretty, or I guess, you know, you said below average. I was going to say pretty average offensively. I mean, you know, probably a little below average offensively just because they have 784 OPS. I think the guy that you really say that makes them, or the most talented guy in their lineup, Will Turner, he's going to be a pretty high draft pick, 944 OPS. 6 home runs, and then Joseph Sullivan, 899 OPS, 5 home runs. Those were kind of two of the three big bats they had last year, and they returned those two. Brendan Holt's another guy, 876 OPS, 2 home runs. Lucas Ismaili, 947 OPS, 6 home runs. So, you know, it's a, you know, pretty average South team. I think, you know, they're kind of desperate at this point, I think, in the season. I mean, they're 3-6 in the league. I mean, if they lose, you know, two or, you know, especially three, I mean, that would put them at, you know, 4-8, 3-9 at a conference, which would really put them, you know, behind the eight ball in terms of just making the conference tournament. You know, I'm sure, you know, they've opened up with a, you know, pretty tough slate, because, you know, three of their four weekends have been against, or three of the first four weekends against USM, Troy, and ODU. So that's, you know, top half of the league teams. But yeah, I mean, they have, you know, two righties and a lefty in the rotation. Both have pretty decent stuff, you know, transferring it from SEC programs, even though they don't have great numbers. But yeah, I mean, this is, I think, a series you look at. I guess their RPI is pretty good, 56 RPI, but their Massey is 89 Massey. So, I mean, they're probably like a top 75 and a top 100 team, an actual team strength. But I think this is a series you expect to win two out of three. And I think this is a series, you know, you really want to win two out of three after dropping that series to Georgia Southern. You want to be able to win, I think, you know, at least, I would say, three out of your five road series in the league if you want to be a, you know, a series at-large contender. So, what do you guys think of that?
Yeah, it's impressive the schedule they played and how that's kind of buoyed their RPI, has kind of kept them afloat from that schedule. 56 right now with only, I guess they're only two games set apart from us in record at 16-12. But I think that looking at their stats, they may have maybe underachieving at the plate so far, especially Will Turner. I was expecting, I guess, a lot higher average than 240, but 944 OPS is still really good with six homers. But pitching wise, it looks like they walk a lot of batters, pretty high whip, 50 something more walks than we have currently. So it looks like, I think our offense did a pretty good job taking our freebies and making sure that the pitchers come to us in the earlier weeks in the non-conference, and not they've done a particularly bad job. I just feel like we drew out more walks earlier in the season, so we may adjust our approach a little bit, try to make sure maybe get to their pin, not get too aggressive, not chase anything. So I hope we have pretty good pitch selection. But yeah, it's probably Calvi's not their best roster Calvi's ever had, but they still have a lot of potential and definitely aren't playing their best baseball of the year coming off of a tough series loss to Old Dominion. But this is a team, it's other best in South Alabama, and not to sound cliche, you can throw the record books out for just about any sport these two play in. You got to come ready to play, and I hope that there's a lot of Golden Eagle fans at Sankey this weekend.
Yeah, I plan on being there, right down the road from my former home. But yeah, I think this for South Alabama, I think this series has the potential to be kind of the defining weekend of their year, right? I mean, I think that they're approaching a fork in the road, right? And if they go one way, you know, they are you know, brand new again. They've got a new outlook on the season. But if they go the other way, and the two paths obviously I'm talking about is winning a series and losing a series, but I think if they go the other way, then it's going to kind of be really difficult to make that back up, you know, in the regards of, you know, postseason potential. So I expect them to play with a lot of fire. They always do, not only against us. I mean, I feel like they kind of do all the time, but I expect them to not give us any breaks and us to have to play pretty perfect baseball to win this series.
Yeah, hopefully there will be a good USM contingent there. I'll be there at least on Saturday and Sunday, maybe Friday. I haven't figured that out yet. But, you know, this is, you know, kind of one of the things you looked at when USM got in the Sun Belt is this annual weekend series. I mean, it's kind of like – it's almost like the kind of like the two-lane series in Old CUSA, a really close conference weekend series where USM fans can go there and kind of take over the park. So I'm hoping that'll be majority USM fans. And, yeah, it would be nice to win two or three games there, outnumber them, and, you know, kind of demoralize them a little bit in this this budding baseball, or I guess all sports rivalry, because they do have USM's number in two of the other major sports, with USM having the edge here lately, these last years in baseball. But yeah, it is a big series for South, and I think if they do lose two or you know, especially three, that would you know, that would put them in a situation where they're just fighting to get in the conference tournament. But yeah, I do think it's a decent enough matchup just because you're only facing the one lefty. And, but yeah, I mean, you know, I think you kind of look at that Georgia Southern was a particularly bad matchup just because you had to face, I guess just technically one lefty in the rotation, but they brought it in the, it was basically an opener situation for one of those. They really had two starters, that were left-handers that weekend. So yeah.
All right.
One last thing on Southeastern, Cole Boswell getting the start against Southeastern, I guess a little bit of a surprise that could mean that, McCarty English may be in for a larger role on the weekends just because, you know, he pitched well against Tulane and then was able to close out the game against Troy. So we'll see what Boswell can do. You know, obviously we've talked about time and time again, the thing with him is fastball control. I mean, he's someone that has a good changeup, some good swing and miss stuff, but he hasn't been able to throw the fastball consistently across the plate. And he's the guy with, you know, not a big fastball to begin with. You know, he's going to be 86, 87. So, you know, when he's throwing it across the plate, he can be kind of like a, you know, a Cord Cockrell type maybe, you know, a soft tossing righty with, you know, a good changeup. But when he's not throwing across the plate, you know, he can get himself in some trouble. But, yeah, Cole Boswell getting the ball in Hammond Tuesday.
Yeah, four scoreless from McCarty last weekend. I was looking through last week when you combine the, I guess, Saturday and Tuesday game. So I'm curious what I'll be looking for pitching-wise Tuesday is if McCarty appears to be the first out of the pen in kind of a piggyback role, or maybe he's saving for the back end or saving him for the weekend altogether to maybe give him that longer stint that maybe the Colby Allen role early in the year if we're trying to use Allen on the back end. So, yeah, great week for Colby, and excited to see what Boswell can do tomorrow. All right, we will move to our questions, and we'll start with Kyle from Midtown. He's got a three-parter for us. The first one, it says, how are we feeling about our schedule going forward, knowing we have UL away and Coastal at home?
You said the rest of the schedule going forward?
Yes.
Yeah, I think, I think these next 3 weeks are where you really need to gain some ground on ULL. I think you look at this being a two and one weekend. Hopefully, obviously, I mean, you want to be 3-0, but I think 2-1 realistically is probably what you're looking for. But then I think, you know, Georgia State's got off to a good start in the league. I think that's a series you look at that you could sweep just based on talent differential. And then ULM at home, I think that's a series you want to sweep. So I think you're looking at 7-2 or 8-1 is what you want to be these next couple weeks. And then you get into, you know, Coastal, or you get into ULL, obviously, and then Coastal, and then, you know, Texas State at the end of the year. But I think this is a three-week stretch where you really want to, you know, build up some wins and gain a little bit of ground on the conference standings.
Yeah, even when you layer in the midweeks there, Southeastern, and Nichols, you can expand that to a 12-game slate, and you kind of hope to be sitting at 9-3, 10-2. I hate to say manageable because you respect every opponent and anybody can beat us if we're playing a bad game, but this is the part of the schedule you don't really have any extremely huge, large RPI numbers ranked teams coming to play or going on the road. Not to take anything away from South because that's going to be a great series no matter what either team is ranked or how they're doing. But I agree. I think that these three weekends are big catch-up weekends with UL winning, 10 or 11 straight games. They're playing great baseball right now. Yeah, the second one I think we covered a little earlier in the episode. He says, thoughts on the bullpen struggles these past 2 weeks? Is it really as deep as we thought? I think when I alluded earlier in the episode, when your seventh inning and your eighth inning guy and Cook and Payne aren't really throwing like you think they're going to, or seventh and ninth, I guess Payne was labeled as a closer, haven't really been factors this far into the season. And Middleton, it's kind of been hit or miss. That's going to take away a lot of your depth that you think you have going into the season, at least perceived. But this is the time of year we've talked in a few episodes about where Ostrander always has those late bloomers. So I hope maybe this is the first weekend we get to see some of that. But yeah, I think we covered that earlier, don't you think?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, shoot, and I hogged that. And this next question is just for me. He said, Jonathan in particular, which vehicular orifice, big words, Kyle, way too big for me, are you going through this week to beat South Alabama? So I guess background for everyone here, I believe this would have been the 21 season back before we were in the Sun Belt when it seemed like we were losing every single midweek to South Alabama and it was a curse. Just like,
did you say 21 or 22, right?
Was it 22?
22, because in 21 we got swept by them. 2022 is when we broke the curse.
Yeah, so 22, after being cursed in 20 and 21, it seems like we lost every midweek to them. Me and my left-handed brain came up with the idea to go through your cars, through your passenger door, the day that we played them in that first midweek. And shout out to Chris Sargent, had a huge hit that night, and we broke the curse. But I don't have any creativity. That's about all I've got. I haven't come up with anything new for new curses in Southern Miss Athletics. I'll try to workshop those. But No, to answer your question, Kyle, I think I will be. I'm going to see how Friday goes, I guess. And if we start out slow or if we maybe lose Friday night, I may go through the passenger door. I'll keep everyone posted via the socials, I suppose. But I kind of want to save the juju for maybe the Coast or UL weekends or maybe June, hopefully. But thank you for that reminder that I single-handedly conquered the South curse. Just kidding. Oh, man. First question is from Cloverleaf. He says, you're a three-star sophomore in football or men's basketball in high school. Over the next 3 years, you're evaluating five group of five programs, factoring in on-field success, facilities, and postseason opportunities during college. Rank them as you see them 4 years from now. Tulane, South Al, us, UAB, Troy. I'll let y'all take the lead there.
Let Fitz start that one.
Yeah, Fitz, you lived in like three-fifths of these cities.
I would have to think about this quite a bit, but I don't know. You know, with I don't know if I would consider UAB's program newer, but you know, they did have a resurgence after that shuttering. They've got a brand new stadium downtown in Birmingham. Troy's facilities are fairly new. Kind of like South Alabama, like they're not really old programs. Tulane's got a brand new stadium. So I will take this as an opportunity to say that I think that we have done a really good job of selling our program on prestige and legacy. But I don't know how much longer we're going to be able to do that without some significant facility upgrades and a lot of modernization of our footprint. So I'm not trying to get off into a huge soapbox. So I know I didn't rank those, but I think we're still in a good spot considering those things, but I don't know how long that's going to be.
Yeah, I mean, I think for football, you have to rank Tulane just because they have been the most successful of those five programs here lately. I mean, they won the Cotton Bowl, and, you know, I think they have a really good staff now with Summerall. I mean, they replaced a really good staff with another really good staff. I think they're toward the top in NIL. And I think you look at the other four, at least right now, with the G5 landscape is so interchangeable, and this is just for football, but, I mean, I think you could see any of those B2 or any of those B5, honestly. I mean, if you go off last year, you know, I think you'd have to rank USM 5 because USM was the worst of those five teams on the field last year. But I think, you know, I mean, all of those programs a lot more or newer staffs, I guess is the word you're saying. You know, South has a new staff or a new head coach. I mean, they're retaining most of those assistants, I would think. But then, you know, UAB has the Dilfer experiment, which is very uncertain. And then Troy has a new staff. So, I mean, I think last year USM would have been fifth out of that group. But I think, at least on the on-field success part of it and postseason opportunities, I think you could see USM, you know, rise up to number two. And, you know, if Summerall leaves, you know, Tulane for Kentucky in a year, you know, you can maybe move up to number one. I think basketball, I think you'd have to put the AEC schools on some order one or UAB number one in basketball because, you know, they've, you know, they at least been a semi-regular here tournament. I think you put Tulane two just because they're in a multi-bid league. There's not really any way that the Sun Belt can get another team in, unfortunately. And the AAC did get two in this last year. And then I think the three Sun Belt teams are kind of interchangeable between USM, Troy, and South Alabama in basketball.
Yeah, you said it. And, I mean, I'll spell it out, Fitz. I think if you're going by the facilities variable, it's very fair to put Southern Miss fifth out of five there. But when you talk about on-field success and postseason opportunities – the nature of group of five athletics and how that's shifting. And now you have a guaranteed playoff spot. Those two categories, I think are interchangeable by the year. And every team on this list either has an uncertain head coach that may get fired next year or a first year head coach in football. And that's the real moneymaker. And basketball being just as, if not maybe more reliant on the portal and teams gelling and 1 year experiments year in, year out, just solely because the AAC has a more conceivable path to multiple bids. You can put those 1-2 and then the other three Sun Belt schools interchangeable as well. But good philosophical question there, Cloverleaf. Next question is from Jace. Two-parter. Says, do you feel like we have finally solidified the lineup, or there's still some questionable pieces that could be moved around?
I would say, maybe if, Butler's in a little bit of a slump, if he has another week like he just had this last week, maybe there's a deal where you move, because, Russo had the big, quote unquote walk off, just because it was a 10 run rule, but
and a big hit Friday. He's four of his last five since being in that
pick. Yeah. Yeah. So, maybe there's a possibility where you move Butler out, you move Gillespie back out to the outfield where he's more comfortable, and then, Russo to first base. I mean, that's just a possibility. I think at some point, Nolan Tucker is apparently going to be back very soon. Could be as back as soon as the Southeastern game. Could you see him move in a platoon situation where he faces righties and Broadus faces the lefties based on the, handedness of the pitcher? And then I think the catcher, I think that you're going to continue seeing the musical chairs. I think you're going to see the rotation between Odom, Stockman, and Keys. But I think 8 and 9 in that order with possibly Butler, I think there's still a little bit of fluidity to that, but I do think about at least 2/3 of it, is pretty solid at this point.
Yeah, I think maybe one question mark we had going into the year was center field, and I think that's been more than answered with the way McIntyre's been playing. His bat and ball skills have been just incredible. And yeah, everything else seems pretty short up. I don't think Wilkes is going into the field like we may have talked about preseason. And it looks like, yeah, Butler, Gillespie would be your primary left fielders in any option. And the rest is just kind of a revolving door depending on how quick the second baseman get back. And in that situation, you obviously move Monastery to third. So yeah, a little more continuity than we've seen these last few weekends, and I think rightfully so. And then he says, for the second question, he says, how confident are you in the RPI being in our favor at the end of the year if we continue to win just 2 out of 3 series?
Yeah, I think, you need to win. I think there's some series you need to sweep. I think there's some series where you take a 2 out of 3. I think this upcoming weekend is you take 2 out of 3. I think you look at ULM at home, that's the series you need to sweep. I think Arkansas State on the road, that's the series you need to sweep. So I think, if you can kind of, and I think you can probably, you can afford another, you can probably afford 2 more. Honestly, if you're talking about at large, you can probably afford, 2 more, 2 out of 3, or losing 2 out of 3 series. I think you probably want to win 7 series out of 10 to feel really good about being an at large. But I think, as long as you can, take 2 out of 3 on the road, and then, sweep someone like Arkansas State on the road, sweep someone like ULM at home, and then maybe sweep one other home series. Although, that'd be talking about, maybe sweeping someone like a Texas State, which would be fairly challenging. And I guess the other series you have, you only have 3 home weekend series left, which is kind of crazy to think about. But I think, a long-winded answer that I'm not really answering, but basically, sweeping the bad teams and taking 2 out of 3 against the not so, or against the better teams, or the not terrible teams, and then you can probably afford a series loss here or there to one of the better teams like a Coastal or a Lafayette. Although obviously you want to take those series, I'm just kind of rambling, but that's kind of how I see it.
Fitz, you got anything?
No, I defer to Patrick on all things RPI.
Yeah, we'll let Fitz take the next one.
Well, I'll say this. I think I played around, as you were talking, Patrick, I played around with the Warren Nolan, predictor, and this has us going 21-9 in the conference, 35-20 overall, which I don't think anyone can argue with either of those records, and that has our RPI landing at 53. So I think, like you said, 7 out of 10 conference series, as long as none of them are landmines that you lose, and somewhere between 21 and 23 conference wins, I think getting up above that 20 and getting some of those sweeps that you need to get and not getting swept by UL or Coastal, that definitely puts you in the conversation. But I guess a more literal answer there is we've never seen the RPI with this new formula, so we don't know. Maybe Patrick, maybe you can play with it. You're a lot better with numbers than we are. But
yeah, no, the formula is the same. They've just changed the quadrants.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Or with the new quadrants. So I guess we'll learn a thing or two about what's more overvalued or devalued, or what that looks like from Belt schools. I mean, obviously it's going to, the rich will stay rich or get richer as far as the big 12 ACC, SEC. Once they get deeper in their conference play, just kind of playing each other and elevating with that RPI balloon. But we'll see if it gets better or worse with this new formula.
Yeah, and the needs report, let's see what the needs report says. Because actually, I thought it was down, but it just pulled up for me. So it's USM can get to top. So USM has, I guess, 27 games left. It says USM get to the top 16 by going 26-1 to finish the year. Top 32, 22-5. And top 45, 19-8. Or anywhere from 19-8 to 17-10. So there's a little wiggle room. But yeah, I guess it's kind of weird because the remaining win percentage of your opponents is 550, which isn't bad. But according to this, and there is still a lot of room for this to move around because you know still got half the season left. But you know, it's saying you got to go 26-1 to basically host, and then to be safe at large, it's saying 23-4. I don't know if this have to be quite that perfect, but probably 20 plus wins in the Sun Belt to get you an at large for sure.
All right, we have some questions from some students. Nice to keep us feeling young in here on the pod. First question is from Jackson. He says, it's no question this team has the potential to be on par with the last 2 years. When, if at all, this season, do you think this team will consistently play at their best game? And then he adds, I don't think it will be long before this baseball team gets red hot. Would love to hear your take. Fitz, go ahead.
It's a good question. It's just kind of hard to answer, I guess. But, you can argue that this last week was a breakout. As far as a consistency that you're wanting to see of, like, us not losing any games for 10, 12, 14, 20 games at a time, like, I don't know if we're ever going to see that again. It's just the nature of the sport's changed a lot. We're in this new league that has a lot of parity from top to bottom. So the argument can be made that this last week was a breakout and that, it started a really good stretch of offense. A lot of these things are going to have to be evaluated in hindsight, but, I don't remember the second part of the question. I'm sorry.
It was just that. That was one part.
Gotcha.
I'll say as far as being on par with the last 2 years, I mean, you just heard the needs report. You got to go one regular season loss the rest of the way to be top 16 RPI. So I don't know that hosting is in the picture unless we go on a historic run, and I'm not saying we can't, but as far as the schedule shaping up, if you were to ask when can this team go on a win streak we've seen the last 2 years, this is the point in the schedule. By looking at opponent, this is definitely the point of the schedule. This is the week that it starts, and it's this first 3 weeks of April that leads you with winnable games to lead up to a huge series at UL and then the biggest home series of the Pete and non-postseason in how many years, Pat? Maybe two or three?
Maybe that La Tech series, but that even in 21 or maybe 22 as well. That 21 series was the very first series of the conference slate that year. So there wasn't it was kind of hard to put it into perspective just because there weren't any conference games to go by that early in the year. But yeah, it would be the biggest one in several years at least.
Yeah. So this patch of the schedule kind of butters you up into those two bangers. So this would be the time to go and run if there is one, I think. And hopefully that momentum can carry into those, Jackson. Last question is from Connor. He says, is there anything in particular you're looking for this weekend at the spring game? Oh, spring game's this weekend. Easter threw me off with that too, and a away baseball series, but I guess that's just how the calendar fell this year. Is that televised?
I don't think so, because it's kind of just like a – it's almost like a just a – like drills, and it's not necessarily a game like it used to be during like the Fedora era.
Does it like that? That's fair.
Yeah,
I will say I remember last year. I guess they did that open spring game, and I went and watched, and I was kind of concerned from the spring game that there was not a whole lot of offense going on, and I was thought, well, maybe our defense is just that good, and I was incorrect in hindsight. So hopefully just see something different. You know, I'd like to see a lot of really good quarterback play, you know, now that you've got what you hope is some pretty competent players in that quarterback room making each other better. That's kind of what and that's what everybody's watching, right? So I'm not like, this is nothing groundbreaking, but I'm looking to see some really good quarterback play, hopefully.
Yeah, I would say, just kind of the new look offense, new quarterbacks, new receivers. You're going to be replacing Frank Gore. You know, you're going to have several transfer offensive linemen. So I think the new look offense is kind of how what I would be looking for this week in the spring game.
Yeah, I think, like you said, conceptually, the new look offense, specifically for me, I guess, how he utilizes the tight ends, which I won't be able to watch, but I'll read all the reports and stuff. But multiple tight ends using more as receivers than we've seen in the past few years, different motions and misdirections kind of take advantage of leverage. I think that you will see a different footprint as far as play calling goes, and that's the product of a new body and a new external coach coming in. And then same thing on defense, new style, new scheme, kind of more zone based eyes on the quarterback, run of the ball. Excited to see that. As far as another position group to watch, I'm curious to see what our receivers do. It seems like we're pretty inexperienced there, so this would be a good opportunity for some of those young guys to maybe earn some playing time or catch the eyes of everybody. So yeah, excited to read about what happened Saturday.
Yeah, and we forgot to do this earlier, but just quick review and then preview of the Sun Belt week 7 and 8. So Coastal took 2 out of 3 at ULM. ULL, so Texas State, and we kind of talked about how, you know, ULL's playing really good baseball and how that's going to be a big series. They're 8-1 in the league now. Texas State has kind of played their way out of at-large contention, 4-5 in the league. Talked about ODU winning 2 out of 3 against South. Georgia State winning 2 out of 3 against JMU. Georgia Southern won 2 out of 3 at Arkansas State. And then
looking ahead to this upcoming week, you have ODU at Coastal, App at JMU, Texas State at Marshall, Georgia State at Georgia Southern, ULM at ULL, and Arkansas State at Troy. So kind of a slower week in the league. I guess ODU and Coastal, that'll be a decent series. But I did see, as of yesterday, and I'm going to make sure this is still the case on Monday, so Sun Belt is 4th in RPI now, above the Pac-12. That is, and it's in April, too. So usually when that does happen, you know, it's earlier in the year. So the Sun Belt has overtaken the Pac-12. And, I don't know if that's, you know, a Sun Belt being really good or the Pac-12 having a down year. I mean, you look at the Pac-12, traditional West Coast powers like UCLA and Stanford are below 500. They're in, you know, below 150 in RPI, so that's definitely atypical. Sun Belt, 4 in RPI, and which is, I guess, kind of weird because you kind of look at really only 3 teams right now that I think are, you know, solid at-large contenders between USM, ULL, and Coastal. You know, maybe Troy can play their way in there, but they're 113 in RPI right now. So we'll see how that plays out. But, yeah, any thoughts on that? Anything, I guess, on Sun Belt baseball that caught y'all's attention? Yeah, I thought I saw that too. I meant to say that earlier. It's good for the conference to make that jump. I hope it's sustainable. And not necessarily Sun Belt things to add, but a couple external series and notes that have an effect on our RPI. La Tech lost a series to FIU, which is not good. And as far as the Missouri Valley goes, Indiana State is playing great baseball. They're in first in the Missouri Valley right now, 21-5, but Missouri State is not. They are last in the Missouri Valley right now, and they're 1-5 in the conference. So I'm starting to see some of our Q1, Q2 metrics get a little worse than Missouri State and Tech. They are large reasons why.
You know, and I was going to say, Jacob Pruitt, the ace for Indiana State, that was so good against USM on that Friday game. He's been out since then. I think he's scheduled to come back at some point. Wasn't able to find out what it was, but he has not pitched since then. But I think once Indiana State gets him back, they'll be able to play even better. I mean, the fact that they've done as well as they have without him, that's a good sign. But, yeah, so. Anything else y'all have, or is that it?
That's all I got.
All okay. Good.
Okay. So we will be back next Monday to wrap up or to talk about last week's baseball and then preview the next weekend against Georgia State. And we thank you guys for listening.